We are surrounded by police. Police with tasers, for that matter.
Get your hands off my damn radio. What? Get your hands off my damn radio. What? Get your hands off my damn radio. What? Get your hands off my damn radio. Santa Cruz got it fresh like that.
We are forced to jump through ticketing hoops and then patiently sit and wait for our turn in line to beg and plead for changes before people who do not have the power or desire to grant our wishes. This is pseudo-accountability. So go back to D.C. and make your rules. We'll continue to break them. Self-Defense 101 with DJ Daniel Sun, Wednesday nights at 9 on Free Radio, Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org.
Next on Free Radio, 101.1 FM, Bathrobe Spears Broadsize, the 13th of October, 2005 edition. Stay tuned.
We're here in the Coffee Roasting Company listening to a fine quartet. Looks like the Brian Quinn group. We got a bass. We got a saxophone, piano, and guitar. Sounds pretty good to me. Here we have a situation where an individual has asked for a cigarette for a dollar, and you've given it to him. Why did you give him that cigarette for a dollar?
Because he smiled.
Actually, you gave it to him before he smiled.
Oh, I gave it to him because I wanted him to have it.
You have some sympathy for nicotine addictions?
Yeah.
You yourself are a long-time addict?
Yeah.
How long have you been an addict of nicotine?
That was about 4.
I don't believe you.
Good, because it was a joke.
I thought so. Now, when did you take up smoking?
16, 17.
And you are now?
24, almost 25.
And has it affected your ability to do long-term, long-range running?
Nope.
You're not a long-range runner.
There you go.
Hey.
That was a trick question. I gave you a trick answer.
We've been talking with? First name.
No, that's all right.
An anonymous woman.
And welcome to another edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse, and of course, this is your favorite, friendly, and actually only pirate radio station in Santa Cruz. Or are there other ones forming on the periphery? We'll just have to find out. 101.1 FM is what you're tuned to, or freakradio.org. Our speedy, efficient, and hardworking techies, and collective members all, have gotten the station off of its the kind of problems we were having on Sunday on this show. And I've also learned, quite pleasant surprise to me, that this show is now being archived regularly again on the Huff website. Huff, of course, is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And the Huff website, in case any of you want to review any past shows, is at Huff Santa Cruz, all small letters, all one word, .org, HuffSantaCruz.org, and then you just click on the name of the show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. In case you want to call in at any time during the show, and today we're going to be covering a variety of issues, including the Metro strike. We're going to have an interview with Washington ex-expatriate Paul Sanford, local civil rights attorney, who's defended numerous cases, ranging from the right to hang anti-war banners over the freeway to the right not to be forced to say or pressured to say under God in school prayers to defense of Camp Paradise, the homeless campers who were arrested, I should say cited and harassed by the city in a lengthy trial, pretty lengthy considering, way back in 2001, to the most recent case that I'm aware of that he's been working on, the Maurer case, the so-called Fuck the Pigs case, actually a case about a homeless panhandler who was harassed for having that little message in his cap, his opinion of police department policies after they had given him four different citations, or actually I think it was after two, and then he got two more for the little logo that he put in his hat. They called it panhandling with profane and or abusive language. Of course, he was simply expressing an opinion. He wasn't trying to abuse anyone specifically, but to recount his own abuse. Anyway, Paul Sanford, who took John Maurer's case to federal court and now has the city attorney by the short hairs, is going to be coming on the air to talk about his adventures in Washington. He went to Washington recently as a member of the press corps or some such thing. I'm not quite sure exactly what his function was, but he is, in fact, going to be with us, at least by phone, in about an hour. So stay tuned for that. Also hoping to have in the studio the irrepressible Paul Marcelin Sampson, who many Metro drivers, they can't stand his opinions. But it's important to confront your opponents, and that's why I bring him on the air, and also, of course, have invited numerous union activists. And we'll be playing some tape from the Metro board hearing, where there was really eloquent speakers, no opponents, actually. Many opponents of the board, no opponents of the union, and the need to get the board to go back to negotiations and deal with the issues to get the buses back on the road, which is my position, by the way, full disclosure. My name is Robert Norse, as I may or may not have mentioned before, and this show is also very accessible to phone calls, though I must admit I do have the power of life and death over the microphone here. I try to exercise it with some asperity. Actually, perhaps too much asperity, hopefully with more tolerance than asperity. So feel free to call in at 831-427-3772 if you're interested. Hoping also to get a call from Lisa Molyneux of Greenway to give us her latest update on the only medical marijuana club, what is it, south of Hayward and north of Hollywood in the state of California, although there may be some further east. I'm not sure about that. But, and of course, the first medical marijuana club to open in Santa Cruz in 5 years in the city limits. It's been operating in Harvey West at 140 Du Bois for the last, the last month. And successfully, apparently. And we're going to get, hopefully, an update from that from Lisa. And from any of you who may have been customers at this club. I know the city council made a big to-do about no massaging, no smoking nearby, no dancing, no lewd behavior, whatever. A whole series of unnecessary additions in order to, I don't know, what is it, persuade the most conservative residents, which of course whom you can't persuade anyway, that medical marijuana is not a menace but a plus in our community, and having a distributor is an important function. The police department nonetheless opposed it, but so far, Lisa's had no complaints about the police department. In fact, they've been helpful, I think, in providing security, fire department as well. So I'm not going to diss the police department for its recent behavior, though its position I find inappropriate, counterproductive, and frankly, full of shit. However, let's leave the obscenities to, well, who knows, whoever wants to say them. This is free radio, after all, and you're welcome to say what you wish on the air. Unless, of course, the collective doesn't like what you say, in which case, goodbye, Becky Johnson. Oh, well, anyway, that's another story. So, let me see. I'm gonna play a little tape here, and then we're going to roll into the Metro Strike section of this program. Actually, there's a lot of that going to be happening in the next this show, and I'm afraid in the next couple shows, because I don't know that there's going to be a settlement to the strike. And even if there is, we may be seeking to unlock the secrets of the strike. Who's right? Who's wrong? Is Paul Marcellin Sampson really a management stooge? Are the union's leaders big feather bedders? Who knows? And all the other exciting theatrical issues. Are we dealing with a case of union busting? Are we dealing with a case of stupid behavior by the Metro Board? Yes, that's my view. But that's not everybody's view, as you'll hear today on Free Radio. But while that's happening, let's see if we can actually get a little tape going on here. I'm waiting for this tape to queue up, and it's taking its sweet time. Looks like, however, we do have a phone call, so maybe we will take that phone call and then move into the exciting segment of the show that's next. I think you're on Free Radio. Are you there? Hello? Let's try this one. Are you on Free Radio? Hello?
Robert?
Yes.
That comment earlier, the collective consciousness, it almost sounds like incestuous. If you don't think like us, we'll ban you.
Well, there is a little of that, you know, going around, and also a question of who you associate with, and, you know, have you still there? Uh-oh, our caller cut off, perhaps afraid that he might be himself blackballed. You never can tell. Yeah, I think that's always a danger, and I think it actually weakens collectives when they do that, whether it's lefties or vets. I had an interesting conversation with Bob Patton, who's a longtime leftist and a peace vet, and he recalls the kind of hassles he got in for his right-wing associations. He's he's lefty through and through, but he had some right-wing friends, and the Vets for Peace didn't like it. Now there ain't any Vets for Peace left in Santa Cruz to speak of. The whole organization broke up on that point. And maybe we'll have him on the air on Sunday to discuss that. Santa Cruz Indie Media, as I understand it, did have a meeting on Sunday, and included in that meeting, at the public meeting, to Santa Cruz Indie Media's credit, was Becky Johnson, a stern critic of Santa Cruz Indie Media. Naturally, she's been censored entirely by Santa Cruz Indie Media. I had the bizarre experience last week of finding that one of her posts was on Santa Cruz Indie Media. It was about, I don't know, the strike or some other issue that had nothing to do with Israel. So the folks who were so upset about her pro-Israeli government posts, and frankly, I'm not too happy with those posts, but nonetheless, you know, they had nothing to complain about there. And I then sent in a second post myself that commended Indie Media on apparently, you know, restoring its sanity and recognizing, though it might have some difficulties with some of the posts Becky has, Becky, by the way, is my producer, in case you just tuned in, and she's been banned from indie media for, what, 3 months now, that they would allow her to, and it's been a point of some controversy with some of us homeless activists, because she writes very good, very provocative, and I think far-sighted homeless analysis of homeless issues locally, how city council doesn't or does or repressively responds. And I wrote a little kind of follow-up to Becky's post saying, you know, good work, Intermedia. I'm glad you're back on track here and recognizing that, you know, you may disagree with someone, but you'll not censor them, you know, unless there's some specific legitimate reason to do so that's clear to everybody. Of course, the next day, both our posts had been censored, so, oh well. Anyway, Indie Media did have a public meeting on Sunday, for those of you who are listening, and, you know, I understand it came out pretty well. Becky has written a rather elaborate analysis of this meeting, which she may or may not try to post on Indie Media or somewhere else. But I guess it really saddens me and, you know, also pisses me off that Indie Media does this kind of stuff. I think it's the wrong move. I think it's being done by activists. As I said before, it may sound like a litany, but I think it's true, who are good on many issues. I am really impressed with the quality of Indie Media's reporting around the Metro strike in terms of the photography, the amount of audio tape. You know, Indie Media journalists went east to put their heads in the lion's den with dealing with out-of-control police departments in New Orleans and Houston. You know, Indie Media is there. I was working for Indie Media in Los Angeles in 2000, and, you know, Becky Johnson got her head smashed in for photographing the Democratic National Convention and then won a lawsuit. But 4 years later, you know, they don't like her associations with Lee Kaplan, the pro-Israeli nut. Well, go figure. I mean, there are a lot of people's associations I might question in this community, but if I stopped working with them for that reason, I would probably be sitting alone in my room beating off. You know, I mean, it's a sad story. Anyway, that's my little rant beforehand, and anybody who has any thoughts, of course, is welcome to give their thoughts. It's not the main issue, but it is a continuing issue. You know, it galls me. It means we're going to have to set up another website somewhere. Indie Media said, go set up your own website, you know. Well, you know, that's always possible. Huff has a website, and I guess we'll be trying to post homeless stories on Huff and encouraging people to go there, or posting on other more less repressive indie medias in other cities and do it that way. And, you know, who knows? That may happen, too. Anyway, in case you want to give a call, 427-3772 is the phone number. And I think I know what my problem is here. Yes, I've been a little bit screwed up doing the wrong thing. Let's see if we got this. Boy, that's pretty bad news. Hang on, folks. There we go. Now, what you're hearing is a little bit from the SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, Wednesday night sing-along shindig. As you can hear, they're pretty enthusiastic. Let's let them go while Paul Marcel and Samson revs up his engine.
You're a mean man with a slide guitar. It's a slide guitar. Open the E.
But we have a slide guitar, but then we have a caller, and callers, as you know, come first. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio with a bizarre tape recorder, me and Paul Marcel and Samson.
Yeah, I just wanted to actually mention you something off the air, if I may.
Oh, can you hang tough for a bit and maybe do? We'll play a little bit more tape, and you can talk to me off the air. How's that?
Sure.
Hang in here. And while engaged in confidential negotiations, stay tuned. We're going to have a little more of the street interview street music scene, and then Paul Marcellin Sampson, as he grows his beard longer and longer and waits, will eventually come on the air.
Basic guitar, no matter what condition, you can basically turn it into a slide guitar. And all it takes is a little practice and one of these.
So, which is a
glass tube that you stick your finger in and you use that to make music. The sound of glass on steel is really amazing. I was formerly the owner of Santa Cruz Audio at the end of the mall until the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake.
And then you became a roaming troubadour?
No, actually, now I'm a computer technician, network engineer. I'm Microsoft certified. I actually got a job in a company, and I actually went to school to do computers. And
sneak out nights to play on the street?
And I sneak out nights, and actually I'm doing some website e-commerce integration right now, but I used to do electronic repair. In fact, I still do a little electronic amplifier repair on the side.
You can afford a home here in this area?
Not really, no. No, I barely get by, and the prices are ridiculous in this town. So, but I'm from back east, back in the Gulf Coast. That's been recently
devastated
by the Hurricane Katrina and Rita. Have a lot of empathy for the people back in my hometown. So let's all keep them in our hearts and minds.
So how often do you play with the safe people here?
Well, once a week. Came down here last week. It was my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Well, last week was my birthday. My 50th birthday, actually. And
you youngster, you.
Thanks.
And we'll hear more of this questionable repartee between me and the 50-year-old guy, the youngster, so to speak. But on the line with us is, you want to sign in, caller?
Sure. This is your old friend and fellow free radio programmer, Augusto Cesar Sandino Segundo.
And your Monday show is going to be featuring some stuff coming down the pike?
Yes, correct. Just wanted to let folks know a couple things, I guess. One is that next week, next Wednesday at 7 p.m., Dar Jamil is going to be speaking at UCSC.
Posters around town on that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's an independent journalist who spent a significant amount of time in Iraq over the past 2 years of colonial occupation, and he's going to be giving a slideshow presentation and discussing his photos on the lovely UCSC campus Wednesday, October 19th, 7 p.m., and,
same day I go to
the event's free as well, just to let people know.
Yeah, excellent. This is, again, where on campus?
The UCSC Music Recital Hall.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. There'll be details posted on Santa Cruz Indie Media with this weekend, so people can check that website after Saturday to learn more about the event. But just want to let your listeners know that. And then also, you were kind of talking about the bus strike, and I just wanted to mention the student solidarity rally that happened last Friday.
Let me introduce you before you do to Paul Marcellin Sampson, who is in the studio and who I don't know if he was. Were you on the outskirts of that rally?
No, I wasn't.
Let's see, say something again. We actually.
Hi there, caller.
Yeah,
I know. Robert was asking if I was at the rally or on the outskirts, and no, I wasn't.
He was nowhere to be seen. But you, on the other hand, were zipping in and out, probably banging on the windows and creating tumult at the Sentinel, weren't you?
I didn't do any window banging.
Certainly not.
I was zooming around with my microphone, actually. I was capturing audio.
Huh.
And so one of the things I captured, though, was Sentinel editor Tom Honig coming out. Editor-in-chief, that's what he is, right? Okay, check this out. The editor-in-chief came out and basically defended his paper's coverage of, you know, the strike and the issues surrounding the strike. Talked to several activists over their individual gripes. But then I asked him a question about why was it that, you know, the College Republican, I don't know if people saw the paper Friday, the C-Nile had a wonderful front page cover article above the fold about, UCSC students fed up, something like that was the headline. And
Pickets confronted Metro Strike Day 11. I have it right here. I'm actually passing it to my associate.
Yeah, so there was 10, by the paper's, you know, record, there was 10 College Republicans confronting the strikers, which, you know, the article does mention, there was several more than 10. I mean, I think there was like 3-1 was the ratio of strike supporters now basically surrounding, and you can see the picture there. You know,
by strike supporters, you don't mean union people, you mean students from UCSC, right?
I do, yeah. These were not, you know, union goons or union members. These were students that came down in support of the workers. There's a really awesome student group, the Student Worker for Justice Coalition, and they've been really working in solidarity as much as they can with the drivers. And so
the point is that the fact that the Sentinel only gave us the this, it indicated that the story was the 10 Republicans and not the 30 supporters, I guess was your point, right?
Well, they mentioned the 30 supporters, but here's what I asked them. Why is it that the much larger union support and solidarity rally at 6 p.m. that very same day didn't even get a mention in the article? You know, they purposely ignored a much, much, much larger rally in support of the article.
And they also on Sunday
focused on these 10 Republicans.
Right, and also on Sunday, they ignored completely, not completely, on a back page you had a tiny story about the Watsonville walk.
The Santa Cruz March,
which
yeah.
was quite a, you know, I mean, it didn't have 100 people, it didn't have 1,000 people, but, you know, it was a long march. It was, I think it was, you know, it was something which, if 10 Republicans had done it, you bet it would be on the front page, you know.
Totally.
I would imagine. Let me
they
ask,
don't even have to walk from Watsonville to Santa Cruz.
What,
have to go down to the metro and stand there in the Republican front page.
Maybe I should dress up as a Republican and see what happens. You know, I could wear a mask. I know.
Go infiltrate their meetings, Robert. That'd be a blast.
Well, or just walk up and down. I oppose the strike. I'm a Republican, but wear a mask so no one would know the true identity. But Paul here, are you a Republican? Is that why you oppose this strike?
Absolutely not. I'm a declined estate voter, a dying breed, and I really don't have an affiliation or an affinity for either party.
Well, what's the deal? You've seen the story in the Sentinel, and if you've read it very closely, do you agree with Sandino here that the Sentinel has been, should we say, engaging in, dare I say it, biased coverage?
Well, I'd like to present a few counterexamples, and the point of this is not to say anything pro or con about the Sentinel, but just to share some personal experiences that I've had in talking with bus riders and in the changes in their responses when I start to explain to them some of the union's demands. I had a call from a senior citizen last week. She is shut in her home in Aptos, and she was ready at the start of our call to blame the board of directors at Metro. And I sat down. We spent 2 hours on the phone. I just dropped what I was doing and chatted with her, and sat down and started to go over some of the things the union was asking for, and this light came on, basically, and this very moderate, very reasonable person was shocked, and her goal at the end of the call changed from criticizing the Metro board to, you know, perhaps calling the union and saying, well, maybe it's time to moderate your demands here. Bus riders cannot afford, and bus riders are ultimately the ones who pay either in reduced service or in higher
fares.
Well,
we don't have 2 hours, but here we have Sandino on the line. Sandino, can you give this man 2 minutes to convince you that perhaps the strikers are wrong and the Metro district is right?
Sure, if he really wants to. I'm actually kind of in a hurry.
How about a minute and 30 seconds?
Well, the purpose of that experience is just to say that as people get educated about the nitty-gritty, the actual costs of what the union is asking for and what the effects will be on bus riders in terms of service cuts and fare increases, because sales tax, the rest of the money Metro gets, is pretty much flat. It's not going up. So as people are educated about what the impact will be on bus riders, they begin to back away from supporting the strike. I'm also in touch with a very moderate student, a real leader on the campus, and I don't have permission to use his name. I haven't broached, you know, going public with him, but he's gone public on UCSC community blogs. He's the exact opposite. Blogs are internet journals, and he's the exact opposite of a Republican, very much a Democrat, probably card-carrying, and he's been leading sort of a moderate people's opposition to the strike and to the demands that the union is making, and you can find this stuff on the UCSC community blogs. So it's not all extreme people who are basically opposing the union here. It's also moderates, and it's people who understand the economic issues and the consequences for bus riders.
Sandino, are you a dummy on the economic issues? Why do you support these crazy strikers?
I support them because I know how expensive it is to live in this town, and I have this odd faith in public agencies that if they could just get their shit together, then they could treat their employees well enough to live in the very town where they work. So on that sense, I mean, I do support the strikers from a very fellow worker perspective, but I don't know the budget well enough to really comment on whether or not the strikers' demands would make or break the Metro. I do know the agency's had a lot of fiscal problems, but I've heard conflicting information as well, saying that the agency does have money. It's just what they choose to spend it on is the issue. So I don't know. I mean, I can't really completely and accurately comment from an extremely informed opinion.
Maybe we have some more informed unionists out there, other than these questionable free radio broadcasters like you and myself, or myself and you. Anyway, thanks for calling in, Sandino. Anything else?
People can check out santacruz.indymedia.org, and there's a on the feature there, there's actually audio links in MP3 format. People can listen to the voices that were at the rally themselves and decide whether or not they feel these people are making any sense. And so they can check that out themselves online.
Thanks,
Sandy. And as a really, I'd actually encourage people to listen to Tim Fitzmaurice, the Santa Cruz City Council member and former Metro board member. He really lays into the board, and I think he puts a lot of the accountability where it belongs.
He's a former board. Oh, right, he is. Emily Riley took his place. Or
yeah, he's not on the board right now, but he's formerly, and he straight calls for Mike Keogh's resignation.
Well,
and I got to say that the man taking off on vacation during essentially an emergency strike crisis like this is pretty irresponsible.
My question about Fitzmaurice is, why doesn't he call for Rotkin and Riley's resignation? Those are people he has actual interaction with, and it's safe for him to go after Keogh, who's an appointee, but these other clowns who actually work with him at City Council, I don't think he wants to ruffle their feathers. You know what I mean?
Well, could be.
All righty.
Take care, guys.
Thanks. Of course, another reason might be that Rotkin and I think Riley have kind of indicated that they voted for a settlement of the strike and for adopting the union contract. They didn't actually expose that, but they indicated they did not favor ending negotiations and prompting the strike in the way that it went down. I believe at least Rotkin has said that. Though Rotkin seemed to be saying something else the day before. It's always hard to tell what Mike is up to. You're tuned to Free Radio, 427-3772. 427-3772 is the call-in number. In the studio with me, Paul Marcel and Sampson, and I'm Robert Norris. We're talking about the Metro strike. You can call in if you want. Lines are open. That's an issue that I haven't seen written much about, somewhat in the Sentinel, but in my discussions with union members, I don't think I've had a very good, very clear picture of their position on what do you do about this key factor, because you are a member of the small but long-lived, over the last few years anyway, Metro Riders Union, right, Paul?
Yes.
And you can actually get information from Metro Riders Union by going to?
Well, there are two branches. You can go to the basically non-operative political website, which is MetroRidersUnion.org. There's very little detail right there at this time. We had to take down the old site because it had a forum that was getting spam postings, Viagra and things like that, at the rate of several a day. But that's the political side. It simply has links to our other activities. And right now, the focus during the strike has been on non-political just informing people about their alternatives during the strike, and we've had our strike alternatives page. You can go to iridethebus.org. That's our non-political sort of transit guide site. It explains how to get places on the bus, and it also has the strike information or strike alternatives page. So that's where people can go. We've had about 2,100 hits on that page counted again this morning.
Wow. You can also go to local23.org if you want to hear the UTU, the United Transit Union. Is that it?
United Transportation Union.
Thanks. Our local that's doing the strike, who I support, by the way, in spite of my hosting the vicious Paul here in the studio. The issue that has not really been raised, I think, with the union, which I hope to have a couple of union people in the studio, but unfortunately they're hard to corral, but they may call in. So, hey, all you union folks and union sympathizers and, folks sitting on the fence, call in if you want. Looks like somebody is. The question I want to ask is what about that? What about fare increases, cutbacks in routes, and layoffs, which was an issue you raised, I guess, in 2002, and you're raising again in 2005. Hi, you're on the line with Paul and Robert. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Greetings. What's your name?
Mike.
Hey, Mike. What thoughts do you have for us, if any?
Well, my thoughts are this, that naturally I kind of disagree with the Sentinel on most everything they have to say,
but I saw an editorial the other day that I thought made some sense, which was, and viewed in the macro picture, and I'm sorry to say it, but it's come down to a bigger question in society of, are people entitled to live wherever they want? So, in other words, should we provide whatever wages are necessary for people who want to live in a certain place? Because that's sort of the argument now is, well, it takes a certain amount to live in Santa Cruz County, therefore I deserve this much. Versus the other side would be, well, if you're not making enough to live here, then move somewhere else.
Right, but come in and do the dirty work and kind of commute, that sort of deal, huh?
I really don't know. I'm just saying that this is a much bigger issue than this bus strike. This is an opportunity for us to view a larger social problem in the micro sense.
Caller, can I interject on that theme? I really appreciate that raising of this general social issue. Would you say that someone who earns $52,000 a year and pays $115 a month for full family health insurance, receives free family dental and vision coverage, receives another 10% toward a pension that allows him or her to retire at age 55 with a full pension, and has 4 to 6 weeks of paid vacation, has entitlement to take up to 6 months of unpaid leave in addition within a two-year period, and two of those months can be with benefits, one in each year, and so on and so on. I could go on here for 15 minutes listing what the top two-thirds of Metro's drivers receive. But would you say that a person in that situation cannot afford to live in Santa Cruz?
I honestly couldn't answer the question. I mean, I don't mean to sound flippant or but I don't even care. The question is, are people entitled to anything? In other words, is it enough? Well, if it isn't enough, then come here with a big enough down payment or money from somewhere else to make it. And that's the question. Is this a capitalistic society or it isn't? It's a socialism, and where do you draw the line between its capitalism and socialism?
Well, I guess I'm looking at it more from the perspective that we have, you know, if we look at, you know, labor struggles and questions of entitlement and all this, we have folks earning minimum wage at retail stores on Pacific Avenue or working at Mervyn's, or we have teachers who earn, who start out at $3,500 and progress very slowly over 17 or 18 years on their pay scale, and for most of their, and for overall in their careers earn less than Metro bus drivers. We have all kinds of other people. So that's how I see it. Like, which groups merit more and which ones are doing okay?
But it's not a choice. It's not a choice. If you cut the wages for the Metro drivers, you're not going to raise the wages for the folks downtown.
I've never suggested cutting. I'm just suggesting moderating the growth.
Even if you moderate the wages, it's not going to have any particular impact. I mean, tell me what impact it'll have on the wages of someone working at a 7-Eleven.
Well, that person at 7-Eleven rides the bus, and if that person has to pay a significantly higher fare, we're looking at, on the last union proposal, from my own calculations, this is my own work, and it's rough at this stage, fare increase of more than 50% in 3 years' time. And so, you know, it's that person, that minimum wage worker at 7-Eleven, who's going to pay that, and that person will also suffer service cuts. You know, so there's a very direct impact.
Well, of course, the claim. Caller, I want to thank you, caller. Anything else you want to say? Because I'm going to open up
the line. I just want to add one quick thing. Give me 30 seconds. That, again, I think it's a bigger issue. I think if you raised the question, say, 10 years ago, of can a person afford to live in Bel Air, they'd laugh you off and say, why do I care whether you can afford to live in Bel Air? But these questions are being addressed across the country now. Boston,
if you're a worker in Bel Air and they import you into Bel Air.
Right, right. So
you know,
now that these things are becoming more universal, that's my only point.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I do want to quote from our favorite newspaper, The Urinal, also known as The Sentinel, Sunday, October 9th. It's an article about the Metro strike, which states Santa Cruz County is expensive. This is Genevieve Bookwalter talking or writing. She says Metro top driver wage is $24.80, and in a study released by the Center for Housing Policy earlier this year, Santa Cruz is listed as the third least affordable place to live. Workers should earn at least $25.90 an hour to afford a two-bedroom apartment. Comments, Paul?
I have looked at a living wage study, so-called, from a labor group at Berkeley, affiliated with UC Berkeley. I'll point out that there are living wage ordinances in various cities and counties in the Bay Area, and a living wage by those ordinances, and they're not perfect, but again, it's a question of degrees. You know, we have people still earning minimum wage who need the assistance and resources of the labor movement much more. But a living wage in most of these ordinances would be in the range of $11 to $13 an hour. How one could come up with a living wage figure of a minimum of $25.90, it defies logic.
Obviously, because in order to get a two-room apartment, a two-bedroom apartment, that's how much it costs in Santa Cruz, doesn't
it? Is there a statement?
You deny that.
Well, I have the HUD rents here. I can take a look in a second. If you play a tape later, I'll give you the actual figures.
Sure, but what is your feeling about that? Do you think that figure is
probably that figure is bogus. I was going to say that. And looking at the figures from this group in Berkeley, which were lower even than this, they were much more reasonable. There were bogus entries even in their calculations there and bogus assumptions. For example, they assumed that a person didn't have health insurance and didn't things that don't apply to our Metro drivers. That don't in this case, it was over a labor dispute at the university. Things that don't apply to university workers, public sector workers.
We're talking with Paul Marcel and Sampson. I'm Robert Norris. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to 101.1. Call in number 427-3772. If you want to go online, you can do that to pagesincolor.com. I'm actually going there myself to see what's cooking. Looks like my producer is online. They can cut her off Indie Media, but they can't cut her off Pages in Color. Hello there, producer. So I also want to point out a couple things. There is a Club Cruise show today that this is a shameless plug for Becky Johnson's show. She's actually doing a show on homelessness. I believe Maura LaMountain is going to be on the air. Maura is one of the editors of Making Change, longtime Santa Monica homeless newspaper. They're going to be talking about the relationship in Santa Monica between the business community and the homeless people there, including their support for an ordinance banning the serving of free food to homeless people in any city park. That's going to be on, actually not tonight, 7 o'clock on October 25th. Sorry about that. But actually tonight there is a debate between Rotkin and, I believe, Paul Johnston, union activist, on I think it's Channel 27, and it could be Channel 25, but I think it's Channel 27. That's tonight at 7:30 on the community TV. So if you haven't had enough of this debate and you're still interested in more when 7:30 rolls around, that's the place to go. Okay, the real question we have here, I mean, there are a number of real questions. One question that also has arisen, and I hope that we can get some educated union folks who are perhaps of a different opinion to call in to give their thoughts on this. Does the board have more money than they are in fact acknowledging? Do they really have resources that in fact could be used to cover the driver situation? They could be used perhaps to expand routes, to reduce fares and so forth. Or is that in fact not the case? And is the union, as you are suggesting, Paul, really... I think you're saying that they're too greedy, aren't you?
Well, we were talking earlier about the Sentinel and a perception that the Sentinel was biased. The terms of the union's latest request, latest request for a 3-year contract, have not been printed in the newspaper. And you have to dig very deeply. You have to go on the Metro website and wade through a lot of information to get the material and then understand it. That's let me get there. Mm-hmm. www.scmtd.com, and you will find there the terms of the union's latest request. It boils down to an increase of about $10 an hour at the third year, the most expensive year, and that'll be the baseline ever after that. So, you know, $10 an hour there, and when we cover the increase in health benefits, the increase in pension contributions, the increase in wages, the longevity bonus of 10%, other things like that. So, you know, even if the board had some extra money, which it doesn't, but even if it did, there would be no way to sustain, to meet that expectation in 3 years, or to sustain it beyond that time. Revenue doesn't grow that fast.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, of course, is disputed, obviously, by union people who feel there is, in essence, a surplus that can be used, not a deficit. And also there's a lot of talk about the metro centers being miserably mismanaged by the same people who are playing around with the workers and the public, I might add, in not negotiating in this situation, moving the metro base from one place to another. You heard Scott Graham raise that issue, I guess, on Sunday when... Was it a week ago Sunday when you were here? Did you have any? You have any reaction to that? Do you feel that the metro base was given was competently managed by the metro authorities?
Well, Robert, you mentioned two things. There were two points in what you just said. One was about this perceived notion of a surplus, and then metro base. And one of the problems in these debates where you pit the ultra left against more moderate people, and this has happened to me in the Measure X, in Santa Cruz Community TV, and in other forums like that, is that they move so fast and so many points are brought up that the moderate person doesn't have a chance to respond. So I'm going to respond to your first point about the surplus.
I don't regard Proposition X supporters as being ultra-left. Not that I was even one of them. I think Rotkin is hardly ultra-left, frankly.
But
he's the person who pushed it. But go ahead, yes.
I'm just a label man. No, I'm not labeling you. I'm saying that these are the kinds of attacks. I was attacked as being ultra-right. So, you know, I suppose then that these are ultra-left.
It's throwing a little mud back, are we? Yeah.
So... the first point was about this notion of a perceived surplus. There was a carryover because some positions were left unfilled last year. Some money was saved. For example, Metro has no operations manager. It's a very unusual situation, and we have not succeeded in this community, and it's a community issue. We have not succeeded in recruiting a new person to come to this county to take that position. The last person left. And so for these kinds of savings, Metro had a carryover. Most of that carryover came out of reserves over the past few years. And it went back at midnight, June 30th, and then it came out again of the reserves at 12:01 a.m., July 1st, and is being used to reduce the deficit this year. There will still be a deficit this year after we've taken this carryover from last year. There will still be a deficit.
Is it important to run without a deficit? I mean, do most transit authorities run without a deficit?
The law in California says you cannot have a deficit. You have to have money to borrow against. And basically, we're borrowing. The carryover is borrowed money. It was taken out of reserves years ago.
Are you saying that the other transit authorities throughout the state are not operating in deficit?
If they have a deficit, they have to take money from another source. There has to be another source for that money. They are not legally allowed to run a deficit.
Well, that may be, but again, I ask you the question. Have you investigated, are they running in a deficit? Is it a standard operating procedure? Because I believe that was one of the claims that the union members or some union member made at the Metro Board hearing on Tuesday. That is a regular phenomenon in this country, if not in this state.
Public agencies do not have that luxury, and I will tell you, if you look at major Bay Area operators, there are about 25 transit agencies in the Bay Area. I can think just offhand.
Wait a minute, isn't the federal government running at a huge deficit? I mean, come on.
The federal government has borrowing power. It can issue treasury bills. Metro cannot. But let me say again that I can count just offhand four or five major agencies that have declared a fiscal emergency situation. Metro is among them. But four or five big, big agencies in the Bay Area that have declared a fiscal emergency, which means they have no more reserves left. They have a negative working capital situation. They invoke this fiscal emergency situation so that they can reduce service and make changes immediately to avoid actually running in the red using all of their reserves.
You don't, however, have any figures at the moment on which metro authorities in the state operate at a deficit illegally or use other funding? I mean, do you have a sense of what the comparative is going on?
Well, I'm telling you that when you get to a fiscal emergency, there's nothing left. That is Metro state, and that is the state of other major agencies in the area.
Well, you're making you know, a categorical statement based on the law, which I appreciate, but I'm talking to you about the actual physical realities of other metro authorities and other cities. Do they operate at what is de facto a deficit or not?
As a rule, no. I read the AC Transit budget, I read the VTA budget, I read the Muni budget. Those are, you know, some of your majors. I read the BART budget, and they do not have systemic deficits. They do not.
Have they been cutting back routes? Have they been raising fares, obviously, have they been laying off workers as well?
Several of those agencies have invoked what I just mentioned, this fiscal emergency, as a way of cutting back on their services, yes.
And I know that there was a discussion, a couple of the drivers, at least one in particular, at the last city council metro board meeting, which was before this last one here, before this one that was on Tuesday, I guess a couple weeks ago, there was talk about how there is a Metro Riders Union in San Francisco that operated somewhat differently than yours. They refused to pay fares on the buses, and they were actually, I guess some people were arrested for refusing to pay the increased fares. And have you had any connection with them, and what is your sense of this approach? What do you think about this?
I have no connection with that group. I'll tell you in a moment about a major rider group in Los Angeles that's a riders union and how it differs from ours in Santa Cruz. But the one in San Francisco, I think they had a point, and they didn't realize, they don't understand the economic issues other than the fact that their fare went up, and their fares have gone up by 50% in 2 years. And that money went right into the pockets of the workers with pay raises that were higher than inflation. So, and service cuts were added in addition to. So, in other words, those people standing there waiting for the bus are waiting longer, and their extra 50%, their fare increase is going in the pockets of the workers in pay raises that are above the rate of inflation. San Francisco has the best transit contract in the country. It is indexed. The wage for the drivers in San Francisco is the average of the top two transit wages in the country, and that's what the contract says. There's no need to negotiate. That agreement simply continues for year after year after year. There's no need to negotiate because they get the average of the top two wages in the country.
Which you object to.
Well, it comes straight out of the writers' pockets. That's why. And the group in San Francisco didn't understand where its 50 cents was going. But that's the first fare increase was 25 a year ago and then 25 this year. That's where the money went.
Well, let's take this a step further. Do you know of any metro authorities in California or elsewhere that have adopted a system that you feel is better? I mean, or where workers take substantially less and that meets with your approval?
We have had on a year-to-year basis, even at Santa Cruz Metro, SEIU accepted last year essentially about a 2% increase, and it came in the form of Metro's paying more for health insurance for the SEIU workers. And in return for that, that was worth about 2%. In return for that, there was no wage increase. So SEIU right here, that's the other half of Metro, the non-driving group that is not on strike, that has an agreement in place. And they were very reasonable. And the same thing this year with their negotiations. They accepted an overall increase of 2.72%, applied chiefly to health insurance. And then they're, as part of that, they're getting a small one-time cash payout. There's an example. We have it right here in the county. Groups that are more moderate.
But these aren't bus drivers. I'm asking you for about bus
drivers. SEIU is the other half of Metro.
Right, but they're not the bus drivers, right?
We cannot draw a line. These are people who work for the same district who are subject to the same economic conditions.
I'm asking you a question about bus drivers in California.
Okay. VTA, I think last year actually, achieved a no increase in salary contract for 1 year.
VTA
and there are other examples. VTA
is
in Santa Clara County. There are other examples. They actually negotiated a give back from their drivers because they had planned some very large increases. The drivers realized that to avoid layoffs or more layoffs and more cutbacks, it was desirable to preserve the jobs and not raise the salaries so much.
And, of course, one of your points has been, and it hasn't really been refuted, that I've heard from union sources, that in 2002 there was a simultaneous agreement to raise wages and also engage in layoffs. Now, was this done? Is that a fair description of it? I shouldn't really be asking you this. I should be asking a union member, but unfortunately I have no union member in the studio. In the studio with me, by the way, is Paul Marcelin Sampson. I'm Robert Norris. We're talking about the Metro strike, which I guess is now in its 17th day, 18th day?
More than that, yeah. It's almost 3 weeks.
Let's see.
It is 3 weeks today, yeah.
17th day, according, I guess, Metro Strike Day 17, says the headline in today's Sentinel. Day of bargaining comes up empty. What do you think of Keogh's taking a vacation last week? Any comment on that?
Very frankly, the Metro Board is unusual. There are only the Metro Board is one of the few that I can think of that has actual bus riders on it, first of all, and it has community members on it. They are not all politicians. Three of them are ordinary people in the community.
Mike Keough, by the way, is
one of them.
He's the chair of the board, and he's been much criticized for taking a vacation. We have a call. All right. Hey, caller, you're in the studio, or actually we're in the studio, but you're coming into the studio. How you doing?
Oh, hi. I just wanted to read. I talked with you earlier. I just wanted to add one thing and get, and then you can comment. I'll hang up on it.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, I'm reading directly from a Sentinel editorial, and I think I'm inclined to think that you'll agree with these three paragraphs. But then, and then I want to hear how you would expand on it.
Uh-huh.
It says bus drivers have staged a strike. Nurses at Watsonville Community Hospital. We're considering a three-day walkout, and county workers say they're unhappy with their latest contract offer. Is there a pattern here? Second paragraph. You bet there is. The high cost of housing continues to affect that most vulnerable group of working people, the low to moderate income bracket. Third paragraph. We'd love to see everyone get paid what they feel they deserve, but Santa Cruz County is no longer affordable for many working people. That's the reality. I just wanted to say that, and I'll be interested to hear how you guys expound on it.
Okay. Paul, you haven't really talked much about the cost and the rise. Well, you've claimed that this contention that it costs $25 an hour plus to buy a two-bedroom apartment or to rent a two-bedroom. I guess it's to buy or rent. It's one of the two. In this county is hogwash. Is that right?
I am responding to this notion that $25.90 is the minimum living wage, and I find that notion
well,
to be false.
Not the minimum living wage, the amount for a two-bedroom...
I don't know the numbers for this specific estimate. I do know that more moderate numbers from the labor think tank at Berkeley included false assumptions that don't apply to public sector workers. Public sector workers have pensions, they have health insurance, they have a number of benefits that other workers don't enjoy. And this was an estimate that put the living wage at, I think, $16 or $17. So, how we get from 16 as an overstatement to $25.90 as a minimum, I don't know. Let me hand you an article here from Heather Berner. I know you don't like Heather.
I know, she's okay. She's
from
just,
April.
I've never met a Sentinel writer I've actually liked. So
I rather liked Heather. She was one of the few who covered the Metro Writers Union when it started.
Well, naturally.
In any case, the article talks about the real decline in rents that we've seen in the last few years. Of course, rents rose dramatically during the boom years, during the dot-com boom, and now they are falling back to pre-dot-com levels. They're essentially stable. We have more vacancies now in this community, and we have more stable rents. No one has ever said that everybody can afford a three-bedroom house on High Street or whatever. I couldn't afford that. Lots of other people can't afford that. That's a larger economic problem. When a home costs $800,000 or $900,000, but you can afford an apartment and a very nice one here in Santa Cruz for about $1,000, $1,200 in that range. And we're talking about one person. One wage is meant to support one or at most two people. It's not meant to support a whole legion. The economic reality is that we have the standard 2.2 children and two breadwinners in the family, or we have a single parent and one child, or we have two working spouses, or those are the situations where there is no expectation that one person should be able to support two children and a spouse who doesn't work outside the home. These assumptions are not reasonable in today's economic times.
Well, I'm looking
and
at this.
I return you to the $6 or $6.75 an hour worker at Target or at Mervyn's who really needs help from the labor movement, who's really struggling. How do we reconcile that with the $52,000 a year, which is the wage for two-thirds of bus drivers?
And I respond, other than, of course, the legitimate concern with the rise in costs to ride the bus, helping, drivers does not necessarily, impact badly on those who are. In fact, there's an argument that it is that a rising wave lifts all boats is one theory. And if you the people who gain, significant demands will, in fact, strengthen ultimately the organizing power of those at the bottom. I'm not saying it's necessarily true, but it's an argument. I'm looking at your This is an April article by Heather Berner in the Sentinel. Santa Cruz rents continue their decline. Frankly, as a person running around looking for a room, I haven't noticed it much, and I haven't heard anybody else comment on it. But maybe it's true. I mean, Heather Berner certainly is an erudite individual and has no axe to grind. And she points out that rents, well, I guess apartment rents are, they're up in San Diego, they're up in Oakland, they're up in Orange County, they're down slightly in Santa Cruz, down 1.0% in this particular month of April. I don't know if that translates to September, October of 2005.
Over a period of years, I'm looking also at the HUD rents. Now, HUD, Housing and Urban Development, measures statistically what either 50% of people pay. It finds a median rent. 50% of people pay less and 50% pay more for a given size of apartment. Or in some communities, they look at the 40th percentile. 40% pay less, 60% pay more. And those numbers, again, are showing stability. And they're showing stability this year. You know, we're seeing, in some cases, declines and in some cases, increases of $2 or $3, which is not an increase when health insurance costs and other costs are rising. The housing situation for tenants is stable. Vacancy rates are high right now. This is a better time for those renting than we have seen in years.
Well, we do know that buying a house is becoming more and more and more expensive,
true.
Right?
But again, the I don't know how you solve the economic problem. You know, when a house costs $800,000, $900,000, there's no conceivable way you couldn't raise bus fares high enough or cut enough service so that bus drivers could afford
it. It just seems peculiar to me that the cost of buying would go up or the cost of renting would drop.
That's exactly what's happened, and it's an unusual phenomenon right now. People who own rental property are in a bad situation because their ownership cost is rising and their rents are declining. It's kind of funny.
We're talking to the man with the notebooks and the figures, Paul Marcel and Sampson. I'm, of course, stuck with my load of old underlined sentinels, a pretty pathetic response, and a couple of articles from God knows when, a year and a half ago, from Heather Berner, the homeless woman's friend. As I remember, actually, she was rather sad. But that's another story about Heather, a nice woman, no doubt. Again, I'm not quite clear. You feel there was no problem with old Mike Keogh shuffling off to have a vacation and holding off on negotiations for a week and a half? That was a
no,
good
he
idea.
Didn't do that. The board is an 11-member board, and he is the chairperson. There's a vice chairman, Mr. Rotkin, who was here. Let me point out that the board meets twice a month. The board has been meeting more often than that if we add up all the special meetings.
Wait a minute. It's a strike going on
and
here. Emergency
board,
meetings. Come on.
The board cannot be present every single day. The 10 remaining people could have arranged a meeting. They decided not to. The other question is that this board, like others in this county, tries to reach consensus. And when you have when you have an inability to get several people, I don't know why we're scapegoating Mike Keogh. Other people.
Why are you defending this board?
I'm not. He had
you
a vacation
are.
Planned.
You are defending this board.
He had a vacation planned months ago to visit his son.
Planned, but it was
I'm not going to judge
it
that.
It was in the middle. Yeah, but that doesn't matter.
He's
you,
not an employee.
You just
he
pointed
get
out
paid.
Mike Rotkin could have called the meeting.
He could, and so that's
right.
Mike Rotkin's problem.
Well,
that's not Mike Keogh's
well,
problem.
Well, all right. You criticize the board for not assembling. And
no, I don't. I did not
well,
criticize
that's what
the board.
I mean. You're defending the board.
No. Why would the board assemble? The UTU has made the mistake of saying that authority to negotiate means authority to give more money. And that's not the case. There is no more money. You cannot wring water from a stone. Sales tax is flat. It is growing very, very slowly. And if UTU believes that the only solution to this is for Metro to cough up more money and more money and more money, and the only time it's worth talking is if more money's on the table, that ain't going to happen.
So you're suggesting that the negotiators on the management side were idiots, or they were bullied with clubs and whips into agreeing to this, and then they went with back to the board, and the board turned them down. What's going on
here? I'm
not
suggesting anything. All I'm saying is that the negotiating team was given parameters by the board, and we do not know. This is a closed session issue. No one knows, except for those 11 people, whether the 11 board members, whether the so-called, and it's a tentative agreement. I say that in a loose way. It's not a tentative contract agreement. It was
caller.
A tentative side agreement.
Hey, caller, you're on the line with, you're on the line and you're on the air now with Robert and Paul. Go ahead.
Hi, Robert. This is Emery Ross. I saw you over at the meeting the other day, the former operations manager of the Transit District. Remember?
Yes, I do, Emery. Thanks for calling in. Are you listening in, or are you just calling in blind?
Oh, No, I'm so far from there that I'm out looking at some alfalfa out here in the Central Valley, and I probably will lose you. But anyway, you asked me to give you a call, so I'm calling you. I was going to tell you something real quick before we lose you, is that I think tomorrow is the 18th day, and I guess the paper said we had an 18-day last time, so maybe tomorrow will be the day.
Maybe so. Now, you yourself were actually part of the management team at one time?
Yeah, I was the operations manager and then the chief negotiator at the time. And I didn't do anything really magic or anything. You know, both sides were ready to wrap it up. And, you know, I just happened to be the guy that was there, and we wrapped it up. And I'm sure the same thing will happen this time. You know, whoever's there when they wrap it up will be the guy that wrapped it up. And both sides got to be willing to, you know, to call it a day.
Now, were you ever a member of the union, or were you a member of the just of the management side of it all?
No, I was a driver from the original, you know, transit company, Kenny Transportation, and we started SCMTDA, which was like the association that the drivers had. And then we were threatening to go on strike, and the district took over, I think, with 76. And then I drove, I think, for the district. I was driving for the private company, I think it was 76 to 79, you know.
And what were the issues then that were separating the union and the management?
Well, the way the contract is today, they didn't have really any kind of extra board or the schedule. It was really a scheduling problem also. They would have long, they would have many splits. And, yeah, basically the schedule they have, the contract that they have, or the work rules that they have today, as I say, were developed during that strike. And it made them in compliance with all the other transit districts in the United States, basically, San Jose and all the rest of them.
So it wasn't a question mostly of wages. It was more a question of work rules?
I think, I don't recall how much of the wages went up. I'm sure there was an increase, but I think it was mostly work rules and some pretty unbearable schedules. You know, they had multiple splits and things like that.
Multiple splits is what?
Well, you'd come to work for a few hours, then you'd be off for a little bit, and then come to work, and then you'd go back and do some more work and then come back. They might even have triple splits. It's sort of equivalent to what they've got right now. Is one of the issues that they have with, you know, where they're having to work these that mandatory lunch thing. That's one of the things I guess they've got to straighten out. So it almost makes all the shifts split again.
Well, Emery, you heard a lot of the speakers at Tuesday's board meeting, right?
I did. Well, yeah, some of them.
What was your reaction? I don't know if you can't hear us in the studio because you're way out in the Central Valley, right?
Right, right.
But what we have here in the studio is an individual who opposes the strike. Unfortunately, we have no union representation here. But it's Paul Marcel and Sampson. Say hello, Paul.
Hi there.
Hello, Paul. Yeah.
Hi there. I've read some of those SCMTA, those two SCMTA informal agreements and some of the 1980s contracts. I've got them in the file. I don't have that file with me here in the studio, but so, yeah, I know a little bit about that history.
Great. That's a classic if anybody's got those. That's great.
Yeah, the old one, this 1976, was about maybe 10, 15 pages. They have it in the archives. It's in a binder. Today's contract is like 100, what was it, 195? I've got it here. Let's see. It's
190-some pages.
Oh, God. 188 pages.
Well,
what is it? I made the little logo, the SCMTDA logo, as I recall.
Oh, okay.
Well, what was your reaction on Tuesday to what you heard? Do you think the drivers are being unreasonable? Do you think what did you think of the management's, business of, and we're not going to negotiate with you until you stop striking? It's decision to say, well, you negotiated something with our team, but, you know, fuck that. You know, we're not going to accept that. What's your view on those situations?
Well, it's something I've just never seen before. You know, usually when you have an agreement like that, you know, the board accepts it, and there's, you know, not being part of that, I don't know. They have obviously some reasons for doing that, which I'm not a party to.
Well, that's what I noticed. I thought it was kind of unprecedented, and I asked two union negotiators, and they, of course, they have a bias, but they said that in all their years they'd never seen that happen. Paul, have you ever heard of that ever happening elsewhere?
Yeah, we had an example. Remember that, and when I use the word tentative agreement, I'm using it in a dictionary sense. Usually tentative agreement means an agreement to have a contract. And this was not that. This was an agreement, essentially a side agreement. There would not have been a contract, but there would have been no strike provision
continued
for 9 months.
Continued negotiating.
So, yeah, let's be clear about that. I use tentative agreement in its dictionary meaning, not its labor meaning. But let's look at the more important situation of tentative agreement meaning process to contract or path to contract. The county workers had an agreement that their union, a real tentative agreement, that their union had signed off on with the county negotiating team right here in Santa Cruz. And a few weeks ago, 75% of the membership voted against that agreement. That's exactly the same. The union cannot act without the approval, the final approval of its members, any more than Metro's negotiating team can act without final approval of its board. So we have a real example here, a real tentative agreement, a path to a contract, voted down by union membership after the union had signed on. This was several weeks ago, County of Santa Cruz workers.
Yep. Any comments, Emery?
Well, what you try to do is with the, you know, keep in close contact with the board and let them know where you are on stuff so that that kind of thing doesn't happen.
Well, that was one of the, there were two.
I would say, but, you know, I guess they were, but for some reason something happened.
There were two announcements that the board made, you may remember, on Tuesday. One was that they were resuming negotiations, and the other was that they were going to be regularly talking to their negotiators so they could, you know, stay up to speed on what was going down. Anything else you want to point out? Or any questions, Paul, you have for Emery about his own experiences back in the 70s?
The board there. That's good.
What's that?
I said that was a good move by the board. That's where they should go. They're going in the right direction.
Okay. Yeah. What about the union? What do you think of the strike? You opposed to it? Do you support it? Do you have mixed feelings?
Well, you know, my personal feeling is that, you know, public government, the government shouldn't go on strike. But, you know, it would be nice if the IRS went on strike and the Congress went on strike.
And if the Army went on strike.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right.
I've talked to these guys at length, and I think there's a slight information gap between the reality of what the district has and what their perception is. I think they need to do a little bit more. I think they need a little bit more information on the dollars that the district has to spend, and I think that's not being fully communicated. Maybe, you know, the drivers, they can only go on what information they get from the union and from the management. But, you know, they have to depend on the union to give them the information, and I think they need a little bit better information on the total dollars that are available. Some of the stuff they want is pretty expensive, and I don't know if the district has that kind of money for some of the stuff, but then, you know, you never know.
That's Paul's point. Thank you very much, Emery. Appreciate you calling in. Is there anything you want to conclude with?
Oh, I'm glad I got in touch with you, and that the phone managed to stay in contact with you for that whole distance. That's amazing for where I am, anyway.
Before you go, Paul has something to say.
Oh, I just wanted to say thank you, Emery, and I hope if you attend any of these other, I'm sure there will be more special meetings and regular meetings. There's a regular meeting on Friday, but I hope I'll have a chance to meet you at some point. It would be very interesting to learn more about the history.
Yeah, well, I think, was it tomorrow's the other meeting? I probably would be there if I have to come back that way, so I'll be over there after
doing
stuff over here. Got to feed cows and all that stuff. But anyway, I'll probably be there tomorrow, and I'll talk to you.
Okay.
Hey,
thanks, Emery.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. So tomorrow is a meeting at what time? We have
it's the regularly scheduled, you know, they meet twice a month, and this is the regularly scheduled first meeting at 9 a.m. I'm not sure whether the location has been changed. Normally the first meeting is at Metro headquarters in Harvey West at 370 Encinal. This meeting, because there will be a large number of people, might be moved to Santa Cruz City Council at 809 Center Street. You'll have to look that up on Metro's website. The agenda, there was an agenda notice earlier.
What is the Metro website? I'll do that
right now. You have to find the URL yourself. The website's not being updated in the absence of normal staffing.
So it's Metro, Santa Cruz Metro District?
Yeah, but I'll check on that point when I get home.
I'm trying to do this
home.
Now while we're online.
Okay, I'll have to sit at the computer
here's
and show
the
you.
Here's the Metro.
It's not obvious.
Metro homepage, any place I should go to find it?
You can go to the board.
which would be?
It's a link near the in the bar at the top. There, look along the list.
Contact Metro. Hey, learning how to do this as we go.
Yeah, we can get that information for the listeners at the end of the show and maybe continue with the
right.
I believe it's
at the City Hall. Actually, that was my recollection from some information somewhere. That's happening tomorrow at 9 o'clock. I imagine.
Yeah, I think it's pretty likely that it would be moved to City Hall.
So what I'm going to do now is throw a little wild card into the pot. Paul, you got a little time here? How are you doing?
Yeah, I have some time.
I'm going to give a call to Paul Sanford, who is a local attorney who's also who's been doing some things in Washington. I've kind of described him at the beginning of the show. He's taken on some homeless cases. He's taken on some civil liberties cases. I've got to make sure I have his number here, of course. I believe it's 528. See if I've got the right number. I'm afraid I'm... Let me just quickly take a look here while you're looking around. Hang on just a second. Actually, while I'm fiddling around, let's have a little musical break. Dear, it looks like a little bit of dead air. Hang on here. Not sure what the problem is. Let's see. Well, no, we're having some problems. Well, let's briefly go to this, and we'll be right back. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. You're listening to Paul Marcel and Sampson on Bathrop Spears Broadsides, as well as me. I'm Robert Norris. And perhaps you can call in, 427-3772. We've been talking about the Metro strike, day 14. Pro and con. And that wasn't really Mickey Mouse, folks, but... with somebody else. Here we go.
We feel for the public that they don't have no transportation, and that's a good gesture that we want to give back to the public.
I also note that Mayor Mike Rodkin, who also has a position, I guess, as vice chair of the Metro Transit Board, for some reason has declined to hold an emergency meeting either today or yesterday or tomorrow, but is waiting until Tuesday. Why is that?
That is the answer that we don't know. We've been asking, where is the board? We gave them a proposal since last Friday of a 3-year contract. You know, supposedly on emergencies, they can set up a 24 hours, so they can set a special meeting within 24 hours. They're taking until Tuesday. We don't know. As we speak, Mike Keogh is on vacation, so where is the board?
Keogh won't even be at this Tuesday meeting, right?
As
far as we know, in other words,
that's the question. We don't know.
Rodkin's convening the meeting. That's my understanding from the Senate.
He is doing it, but you know, it's an emergency. They should do it within 24 hours. Why they're waiting until Tuesday? You know, are they the ones that want to stretch this? You know, so
you want to walk as we
sure.
talk, so you can.
So we don't know. We don't know what tactic is that, because we found out by law. When emergencies happen like this, there is no service for the public. They can do it within 24 hours, not until Tuesday.
Well, I know they had an emergency council meeting, city council, which, of course, doesn't control the transit board. You know, and they came up with this 100 bike donation to folks who are, you know, in need of transportation in the interim. And the union obviously supports that because you're good donating some money to that. But my question was, what else could the city council have done to encourage a change in the strike? I mean, they were holding an emergency meeting, or they took it as an emergency measure at their special meeting last Tuesday. What else could they have done, the city council, that they didn't do? Any ideas?
Well, they could have had some input to tell the transit board to go back sooner. sooner than Tuesday.
They could have directed Mike Rodkin, the vice mayor, to try to move immediately for an emergency meeting. He, after all, is both the mayor and, as I said, the vice chair of that commission.
Yes, and that's what really, makes us think, where does Mike Rodkin stands for labor? Supposedly he's all on labor.
Oh, he's the head of the, Ask Me on campus or some such thing?
Yes, he is, and,
on the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union, but suppressing civil liberties downtown with his anti-homeless laws.
Right, and where does he stand? Does he have a double face,
No, not Mike Rodkin.
Rodkin, well, tell me, where does he stand? With all this, labors that he supposedly says, labor should be number one, unionizing it with unions and stuff like that.
Janus face. He looks both forward and backward in order to cover all sides.
Well, it's nice, but, the public is suffering supposedly because of Mike Rodkin's decision to, wait until Tuesday. Why not today? UTU Local 23 is ready to go back to the bargaining table, which is today, Thursday, 24 hours until midnight. Just get back to us ASAP so we can get the service back, start negotiations, and we can get a process so the public won't be suffering.
Did Tony Madrigal, who's also a city council member and has on occasion spoken out on union issues, though to me not very coherently or not very effectively, but still he has, did he make a comment suggesting to Mike Rodkin at this special session when the bike, charity measure came up and was passed, and I'm glad it was passed, suggest that Mike Rodkin do something more, that the city council do something more? Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't have no idea, no comment on that.
Yeah, I don't either, but I was thinking perhaps council watchers might know, and if anybody wants to call in, give us some information on that. This is taped, but I will probably be in the studio. In fact, I know I will be when it's being played, and so if you have information, anybody out there in the radio land, give a call to 427-3772. Morning. So, the story now is, I noticed in the Sentinel that in its latest front page story, they mentioned that essentially they blamed the union for striking and rejecting the last proposal. But in fact, was it not true, and I guess everybody knows this by now, but it doesn't hurt to repeat it, that what happened was you and the negotiators came to an understanding, you being the union, and even though it wasn't a signed contract, it was an agreed-to contract where you had somehow the impression that the negotiators were empowered to come to that contract. Otherwise, why talk, right?
Absolutely. That's what they want us to go, go get the buses running and we talk. They had that opportunity. What trust do we have? We lost it completely. When they have a negotiation team to go and bargain, and then they come back and the board rejects it, what are we going to do? We want something, signed by the board before we go back to work, because we don't want this to repeat itself. The public doesn't want us to go back to work, and then we are at the same position that maybe they will bargain in bad faith, and we'll be back out here on the street. It's not right, it's not right.
It doesn't seem to be much point to, go back to negotiations if they're not going to have any power to negotiate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course not.
It's kind of strange. A question asked by critics of the strike, which I recently had on my show, Paul Marcel and Sampson, a critic of the strike, although he says a supporter of bus riders and bus drivers, that, you guys make more than, let's say, teachers do locally. You make more than other professions do, some of them, many of them, certainly more than people downtown at $8 to $10 an hour, the slave labor that runs this town pretty much. And yet these people need you to get to work. You're paid, most of you, much higher, what $50,000 to $70,000 a year, is that right?
Well, it's right, but first we have to let the public know that when you start working, you don't start doing $50,000 a year. That's, $50,000 top after 6 years of giving service here.
So $50,000, not $70,000 is the top.
$70,000, that is with people working overtime, which is a six-day, time and a half, seventh-day, double time. That is the amount when people do work, they're 7 days a week. You do get that, but you have to work like 300 days out of 365 days a year.
And they actually make you do, or they encourage or pressure you guys to do a lot of overtime because they don't fully staff, right?
No, they don't encourage us. It comes from the heart of the drivers. They want to do it, even if we're fully staffed. They like what they're doing. They like serving the public. That's why they do it.
But you're not fully staffed. So, it doesn't, in fact, require, not by the contract, but in fact by the circumstance, you wouldn't have buses running on routes if there were not
drivers taking overtime. In fact, wasn't there a complaint that you guys were doing a slowdown prior to the strike by not taking overtime?
No. The drivers took no overtime because, you know,
they complained that you were.
Right? Yeah, the media complained that, you know, we were making so much money. So the driver was saying, well, you know, the effort that we're putting, working time and double time and time and a half, people think, you know, we're making a big amount of money. So, you know, why put the effort when the public supposedly thinks, you know, you're just making a big old amount of money when it's not true. You know, it's you're working. You're working for it. And the transit, because we always are understaffed on drivers, we have to pick it up the slack, and the drivers do that.
Right. I mean, that's my point, is that, in fact, that there's a decision by the management not to hire enough drivers so that overtime essentially is not required.
Well, of course. You know, they rather pay overtime to a driver than to hire a driver and pay full benefits that will be more costly to the district. So they save money at the long run by paying time and a half and double time.
Uh-huh.
So drivers pick up the work. So the district can save money at the long run, because imagine paying a driver full-time benefits, supposedly what we make a year, it's more costly for the district.
But in a way, it would be easier for the drivers and perhaps better for the public if they hired more drivers. I'm not quite sure how much more it would actually cost, but leaving that aside, another issue has been health care benefits. You know, okay, you guys get paid more, you get more health care than, let's say, most other workers in the area. They say, you know, in terms of low-paid workers, they don't get any health care, many of them. But the issue then came up, well, health care situation is that you're going to get they're claiming that you are taking a cut in the amount of health care that you're paying more for health care. You're actually paying less for health care under the proposed contract, but that you've agreed to pay more for health care in order to keep what's called general leave. But the district rejected that because they somehow felt it was unfair to the rest of the drivers. Do I understand that? They were afraid that in June, if the negotiations extended next year, health care costs would revert back to a higher level, and that would somehow be unfair to the drivers. Do I understand that correctly?
No, it's not correct. It's all a red herring. They're confusing a medical package with a general leave, which is just general leave without pay for a month for a driver.
But with benefits.
Well, with benefits, because we pay our health insurance a month in advance. For instance, we're out here on strike. We still have that. We still have health insurance for this month,
right?
Because we paid it in September.
Right.
Okay. So the only thing that the district pays is the next month after that, which is 30 days after, which is like November. But you know, it's not costly because of that. With the general leave, in the summer service drops because UC is not in service. Cabrillo College is not in service, and San Lorenzo is not in service.
And the significance of that is?
The significance of that, all drivers, there's less routes, so there's people getting paid for just not, you know, they need people to take vacation off so they won't be just here or without, you know, getting paid.
So that's when most people take their time off, or it's easier to get time off then.
Absolutely, and it's got savings to the district, because instead of being here with 140 drivers, when the routes are 100 or 110, you have 43 drivers that, you know, what are you going to do with them?
Well,
just call them to work and try to see how you're going to fit them. And sometimes, you know, there ain't no service out there. So it's cost savings to the district.
You know, it's interesting to me, though, again, getting back to this health care controversy or the controversy on general leave, that the claim that they want to help the drivers by making sure that you don't get a year. I understand it according to the Sentinel, although the Sentinel is always difficult to rely on entirely. They rejected the contract because they didn't want, even though you've agreed to pay more for health care starting next year, actually not start, I'm not sure when it starts, whether it's in February or whether it's now, but you've agreed to pay more. If they don't reach a contract by next year, the health care benefits or costs would, the amount you pay for healthcare would rise again to the previous level. I guess it was 400 and something until the new contract, and then it was going to drop to 100 and something and drop even more. But you said no, we'll pay 200 and something instead, and it would go up. It would go up again and to that 200 and something. And
wow, my apologies to my listeners for letting this elaborate attempt where I'm attempting to understand the health benefits part of the contract to. drone out over the airwaves. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM and www.freakradio, also broadcasting on pagesincolor.com. If you are a real maskist, it's time to go to your community TV station 25 or 27 and hear the master debaters, Rotkin versus Johnston, for an hour on the show Voices. So check it out. It may even be archived. There was a question. I have in the studio with me Paul Marshall and Samson from our producer, Becky Johnson. Is the Metro Riders, Bus Riders Union going to hold a meeting soon?
It's kind of hard to hold a meeting of bus riders from around the county, first of all, when people are working and have their normal commitments or going to school, and when they have no transportation. Even the Metro Riders Union is an outside independent rider group. The internal official rider advisory group at Metro also is unable to meet now because there simply is no transportation for the membership. So that's kind of an exercise in futility. I appreciate the spirit of it, but, you know, I'm relying on phone calls with people. I have one other person who's working with media and who's been getting out PSAs and things like that, and we're just, you know, desperately trying to keep in touch and using the website and things like that. But in-person meetings are impossible when folks are spread out over the county and there's no transportation.
The short answer is no
way. Yeah. I mean, it's just not, unless people can drive. We wouldn't be a bus riders union if we had cars.
Said, oh, no, we can't allow that because we're...
Thought we'd gotten rid of that guy. Hang on.
Lonely, lonely time.
Breather with some street music. Stay with us on Free Radio and or call in 427-3772.
You keep on showing everything you've got, and baby, baby, that's quite a lot. You drive us wild, we'll drive you crazy.
We've heard enough of him, I must say. But you can go downtown if you'd like and actually sing along with the Safe Singers. Perhaps you can do better than certain other unmentioned singers. Wednesday night, 6 to 10 o'clock in the evening, front of New Leaf Market. Grab some soup, grab a guitar. It's open to everybody. And it's a reclaiming of community space. Lest anyone think that Paul Marshall and Sampson is a Republican Klansman. Paul, you yourself have been an outspoken opponent of the fine them to death if they have a party deal, haven't you?
Indeed, I have.
And has Mike Rotkin apologized to you yet for passing that unruly party bill?
Oh, we have a caller.
We do have a caller, but you, I guess not. Paul.
I haven't spoken with Mike about that.
Hey there, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Paul. Hang on, let me turn up your mic here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to do a quick check-in. as of yesterday, at three times I've been over to Greenway, and it's been great. You know, I got to say, you know.
Greenway, of course, is the Medical Marijuana Club at 140 Du Bois Street.
Yes, yes. And, God, I got to tell you, man, Lisa Molyneux has really been taking good care of me. Good stuff going on over there, some good people. And so far it seems to all be going well. And another question I was going to ask you, when I heard your show a couple weeks ago and I heard you read out about that, some article that was put out by Tracy Galloway, I was wondering if you had a copy of it by any chance, if I could get a chance to read that, because that really pisses me off.
What was the subject matter?
Oh, about like kicking out all the bums, about the homeless issue thing.
Doesn't immediately ring a bell, but talk to me more about it maybe off air, and I could possibly, you know, get my memory together there.
Yeah, that really makes me angry, because I used to work for the urinal, you know, 7 years ago, and those people got a lot of nerve. They're not nice to work for, at least not in the mailroom department. But
okie doke. Fair enough. Well, yeah, give me the information off air, and I'll try to get you hooked up if I can remember it. And indeed, shows are being archived online, so if you have access to a computer, and this is true for anyone else out there, all you have to do is go to huffsantacruz.org and then click on a couple of the old shows. Unfortunately, they aren't very well described. Like, some of them are completely mysterious. You know, you got to go to listen to them to find out what they're all about.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. My computer's been down for a while, and I can't even deal with it right now. It's going to be down for a while, so I don't know. It's going to be kind of tough, and you know, the getting around thing. But I did leave you, one message earlier on the Huff line, but I just wanted to call in and comment because it makes me angry enough that I think I want to file a complaint with the Better Business Bureau against the urinal. That's how much I really don't like them, and they didn't really treat me that great when I worked for them. So anyway, I just want to call and check in, but got to go. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Andrea.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good luck.
Thanks,
Rob. Talking with
Tony Titchener. I'm a bus operator. I just want to interject that something that the board members seem to be forgetting. If they don't call this an emergency now, the fact is we are the first responders. So if something were to happen, like an earthquake, not only would there be no bus drivers to drive, but the buses would all need to be jump-started by now. So it's a real situation that should be considered. We're the first responders, and they're not allowing us to do our job.
Well, I mean, FEMA can help out. We know that. They've done such a fine job in New Orleans.
Brownie's a good man.
He is. Brownie's my boy.
Yeah. He's doing a heck of a job.
Heck of a job. Thanks. So it's October 6, 2005. I'm near Laurel and Cedar Streets, and fire department has been called by apparently overly anxious folks concerned about a guy trying to take a snooze on the sidewalk with his rather docile-looking pooch. We're talking with
Richard.
And Richard, you're holding your bag in one hand, and you got your dog in the other. And here we are, and you're looking for a place to stay. You already got a ticket for dog on Pacific Avenue?
Yeah, and I have a service tag for my fucking dog.
Service tag is, tell me what that is.
It's a, look on her, it's the California Assistance.
Well, so
I already took her on a Greyhound.
So this dog assists you in moving around?
Yeah, my companion, my best friend.
And what kind of disability do you have that the dog, you know, helps you with?
I got a broken ankle and I got fucked. My head's all fucked up. But anyways.
I gotcha. And however, right now it looks like you're homeless, at least for the night. And you know, you look like, you know, you're not working.
I'm with my friend, and he's just supposed to get his fucking check, and we can get to Santa Monica down by Venice Beach to get home.
Right. Well, where's home?
Venice Beach.
Gotcha. First time in Santa Cruz, or you've been here before?
I've been here many a times.
When was the last time through?
About 17 years ago.
So this is your first visit in a while. How did it treat you last time you came through?
I never had no problem, but I came here with a friend of mine that's supposed to fucking get us back to L.A.
And he hasn't shown up.
And he disappeared on me.
How long you been in town?
A couple days.
Now, I know the fire people suggested you go to the park, and I told you the parks are, after dark, it's illegal to even be in the park, much less sleep in the park. And, you know, you asked me, where the hell can you go to lie down and sleep? And I told you, you got to conceal yourself somewhere. You got to find someplace where, you know. There are you,
broke and shit.
You might try going to the post office, which is a ways down here where a lot of there's people have slept there. You might go. Again, that's kind of off of Pacific Avenue, so you would not get a ticket for your dog. You already wouldn't.
I want to stick close to Pacific Avenue so I can find my fucking friend.
Well, that's within a block of Pacific Avenue. You might want to. I'll walk you down a block if you want. I'm going to meet somebody. But what?
Hey, can you help me with a little change? I get some food.
I'll think about it.
I just want to get food, bro.
I got you. Actually, tonight, I'm not thinking of any food services that are open. It's this Thursday evening when we're talking. So when did you get this ticket for the dog?
Last night.
And you,
Pacific Avenue.
What were the circumstances?
I told him I have my service tag for my car, and he's like, I don't care. He's a fucking asshole.
Do you remember what the cop looked like?
Yeah, he's already fucked me twice. And I've only been here 2 days.
Did he have an accent of any kind, or what describe
white
it?
White boy. Just a fucking asshole. All cops are assholes.
You didn't notice his name or anything like that?
No. I got the fucking ticket. I'll show you.
Okay, let's stop here in the light and let me take a look at the ticket. Sugar. There's doggy. Hey, sugar. So this is a citation by Officer Williams for.
I have my dog.
8.14.200 or 900C. Yeah, it looks like no dog on Pacific Avenue, perhaps. I can't quite read it. Did he warn you that was illegal before and then come back and give you a citation, or did he give it to you on the first round?
He gave it to me on the first round. I told him I have my service tag right there. You can read it. It says California Assistance.
Let me take a look. Sugar, can I take a peek at your...
Sugar,
can I take a peek at your service tag? Is that okay?
Yeah, look at it. See? Right here.
Where is your service tag here? Let's see here. There's a nice looking poop. What kind of a dog is this guy?
He's half dingo, half pit and shout. Read the back of it.
And it says... come back. Come back, sugar. Very good. Very good, sugar. Yeah, that's a good pooch.
California Assistance dog.
California... I'm trying to read it, but I got to get some light here. Come on over here, sugar. Come on.
Here.
Let's see. So it's California Assistance Dog on one side. And the
922.
San Francisco City and County Animal Game and Care and Control.
Animal Care and Control. I know
phone
Judy
number.
And Mara, that runs the place.
Now, did you show this tag to the officer?
Yeah.
And what did the officer say?
He said, you still can't have your dog here. I told him, fuck you.
Huh. And I think service dogs are allowed, although...
Yeah. I've had no problem. I just took her.
Well, it's true that you have a, no offense, man, sort of homeless look to you. You know, I mean, you look a little weather-beaten.
I'm tired. I've been traveling.
Right.
I came back from Canada.
What was happening up in Canada?
I'm just fishing, trout fishing.
Oh, how'd that go?
I had fun. I want to go back, actually.
And so you were just tired. You weren't intoxicated yesterday when they gave you the ticket. Okay. Well, again, we've been talking with
Richard.
Thanks, Richard. Well, it's about 9:40 on October 8th, 2005, out here in front of the Metro, the honk of folks supporting the strikers. So we got. 4 pickets. Where is the board? Support your UTU drivers and passengers. And on strike. I'm trying to read the rest of the sign. Less money. Less benefits. Less white. This is the an official of the transit board or the transit authority. Across the street, the Budweiser truck is preparing its delivering booze. Because I should, and there's a security guard here who's chatting with somebody on the radio. See if I can interview some of these strikers. Hi, I'm with Free Radio. What's happening? How's it going?
It is so early in the morning.
How early did you get up this morning to do the picketing?
You know, I got up at 7 myself, but it was just a long day yesterday, and all I wanted to do was sleep in.
Was this your first time on the picket line?
No. No, I've been out here since day one.
And have folks been signed up? Has it been kind of, I mean, you've got four folks here today, is it? And then yesterday you had a large rally, right?
Yeah, we had a few of the Republican UC students come down to basically what they call strike the strikers.
How many were there? I know the Sentinel.
Probably about 5 or 6 of them, but there was about 3 times as many UC students that were on our side,
right,
drowning them out and you know, helping us out, because we pretty much wanted to stay out of it and not get involved with them.
And I know there was a crowd of folks from the Indy Media story, and if you've seen the story on SantaCruzIndyMedia.org, a lot of photos of that. Emily Riley was talking, Tim Fitzmaurice.
Oh, yeah, later in the evening, we had a union rally where we had a lot of different unions from the county show up and show their support for us, and Emily Riley.
Against the lands of the Shoshone and against the poor. And it's here in our own country, and we seem to turn our backs. We think we'll keep our freedom since we fought and bombed Iraq. Have you lately talked to Jesus? Have you listened to his words? Or is the Star-Spangled Banner the only song you've heard? Oh, the vision that we're seeking, it is found through humble means. There are those who know the answers, but we kill them with our greed. For they speak a different language of the cycles of the land. But in our fear and in our ignorance, we just don't understand.
often want to come back because they're low on money or their personal projects don't work out or are completed. A trained driver can move into the workforce smoothly. This person knows the personnel.
And we're listening here to some of the discussions and taped stuff from the Metro Board 2 days ago. We're going to give Paul Marcel and Sampson the last word with a few thoughts in about 5 minutes. But lacking a union spokesperson in the studio, just having the poor resources of a fumbling talk show host, we have to have a little professional help here.
The buses, the routes, and the passengers. The district knows this person to be reliable and competent. The reservoir function, like the seasonal demand function, has been overlooked and ignored by management, transit district board members, and by critics at large, who have no idea of the complexities involved in scheduling and hiring many drivers under the constraint of seasonal variation in demand for drivers. The craziness of asserting that general leave is a cost cannot be overstated. The tactic of twisting a non-issue into an issue befuddles logic and punishes passengers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Bonnie Moore. I'm the representative for the United Transportation Union, Local 23, the bus operators, for the Santa Cruz Metropolitan Transit District. I'd like to thank you for being here. It's been a long wait. We've all been working very hard out there. I wanted to start off by basically saying that we've given you a 3-year proposal approximately 2 weeks ago. We have been waiting for either a counter proposal or some type of contact from someone, and we haven't heard from anyone as of yet. We're not willing to negotiate our contract in the public arena. We don't want to do this through the newspapers, through the media, or through the radio or TV stations. We prefer to do this at the negotiating table. We're requesting that you appoint and authorize a negotiating team in order to negotiate this contract with us in good faith. We are requesting that you also schedule additional meetings of the board so that these areas can be approved by the transit board as necessary in a step-by-step process. We are requesting that we have substantial progress made prior to the bus operators going back to work to drive again. We would like to go back to work as quickly as possible. We know that there's an ability to do this as long as we both can work together. And we're looking at the ability to work together with both the transit district and the bus operators in order to meet this goal. And thank you for meeting again. I know that you have another meeting on the 14th of the month, on this Friday, at a board meeting. If things go well and we have an ability to move forward, we could feasibly have the buses back on the road by this weekend or by the beginning of next week. But that will take a commitment from both you and from the union as well. We need to move forward in a positive direction and get the service back to the community where it belongs to begin with. We're looking at good faith bargaining at this point. And we're hoping that we're able to work together again. We do have some documents for you at this time. Thank you.
May I ask you a question if I could? I'm just curious, what is the progress that you need to see that would get the bus driver?
I said before that we're not interested in negotiating in the public arena. We are interested in negotiating at the negotiating table. We would love it if the board members would like to attend at that time. I think it would probably be a positive process. But there needs to be some substantial good faith effort on the part of the transit district at this time.
My name is Susan Kipping, and I'm a Felton resident, and I'm here to talk about the bus strike. First off, I'd like to say that our leaders, I'm very disappointed in you. I think the leaders of this county get an F-. This has been an emergency, and you've left us all down, all of the citizens have been left totally defenseless. I've seen young girls hitchhiking. I've seen students missing their classes. Elderly that can't get to their doctors. You've stranded thousands of people. You've congested our roads. I want to tell you, in the Sentinel, they are saying how much a bus driver makes. Well, they don't make much. And I know that we have county employees that make $150,000 a year. This one employee is known as a sixth supervisor, county supervisor. That's four bus drivers. I would rather see more buses. Out in Felton, our buses service has been cut. A bus driver drives a bus about, 40 feet long, in the dark, in the rain, jam-packed with people that are tired. They have no idea who's gotten on or off their bus. But those people trust that bus driver. That bus driver is experienced in driving and gets them to their destination. A lot of people's lives have already been destroyed because of the strike. I think that everyone on this board should be let go. I think we should start over. I think we should have a board of people that actually take the bus. I think we should have some people. I think that we should have people that are elderly that could die if they don't get their medicine. I think we need to get people that are in their homes and cannot get out. Do you know that this is Domestic Violence Month? Do you know how many people are trapped in their homes that really, really, really need to get out of their homes? And you don't even hear about that. We're sitting at home waiting for our leaders. And I must say, this country is really, really hurting for good leaders. I don't see any good leaders. We have a dysfunctional election. Our whole election is dysfunctional. So how we can even get you in there in the first place? And then you have the privilege to represent us, and you do such a shoddy job. This one gentleman, Keogh, that went on vacation last week, shocked the bejeebies out of me that somebody would do that when this is a crisis. Now, in New Orleans, we saw what happened without buses. People died. They died long, terrible, slow, painful, humiliating deaths. Deaths! And I don't believe the toll of the dead. They come up with almost 1,000. And they don't have names. They haven't named these dead. That's because I believe there's a lot more than just 1,000 people died. If they would have had buses, they would have gotten the hell out of there. But no, there were no buses, just like there's no buses in the supposedly progressive county. I'm really tired of seeing my tax dollars going to an illegal, terrible war and tax cuts for the rich. While we down here are supposed to fight for whatever we get from each other, I support our unions. Our unions are the pillars that are keeping us from getting crushed from the elite on top, corporations, military complex, and very corrupt politicians. They're trying to crush us down here. They're taking our libraries, our schools. They're cutting our veterans' benefits.
And that was the speaker at the Metro Board on Tuesday. There'll be another meeting of the Metro Board tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the morning. Excuse me, I haven't been drinking. You can do that check that out at City Hall at 809 Center Street. We're entering the last few moments of Bathroom Spears Broadsides, and I'm going to try to be playing some more of this tape on Sunday when I will presumably return at 9:30 in the morning, and even might even drag Paul Marcel and Sampson, and who knows, maybe a union guy or two back into the studio. But it has been kind of Metro heavy, so I promise you we'll be talking about other things. Maybe we'll get a special preview of Becky Johnson's experience with Santa Cruz Indie Media.
I'd love to hear more about that, and I'd like to hear about this meeting. I am also hoping that in the next few weeks we'll hear about the 70 series propositions, 73, 74, 75, if we have that election coming up.
Yeah, people are going to have to vote and make up their minds on those propositions. A couple of quick details. We have tomorrow, Friday the 14th, I have that right? Let's see. Yes, largest Medipot trial in San Francisco tomorrow. San Francisco, the world's most prolific cultivator of medicinal marijuana, Charles Eddie Lepp, will be in court Friday at 9 a.m. at San Francisco Federal Building, 450 Golden Gate. He's facing four life sentences plus 40 years plus $17 million in fines. On August 18th, 2004, police seized 32,524 cannabis plants were growing on Lepp's Lake County property. Lepp maintains the plants were not his. Rather, they belonged to thousands of patients who he had signed contracts with Lepp to have medicinal cannabis grown for them. A rally in support for Lepp will follow the courtroom proceedings at the corner of Larkin and Turk. So all you San Francisco folks who can drive your cars up to San Francisco or jump the Greyhound, whoop up there. There's also going to be a CHAM rally. It's Community Homeless Alliance Ministry event on October 17th on Monday, which I'll be telling you more about on Sunday when I come back. I want to remind you that it was Native American Slaughter Day yesterday. Actually, I guess the 11th was the day, also known as Columbus Day. I usually read a story from Lies My Teacher Told Me about the systematic slaughter in the most gruesome fashion of the Arawak Indians under the leadership of Columbus and his relatives, his brother it was, who governed the island of Hispaniola and depopulated it between 1492 and 1502. But I didn't this time because my book was in storage. My friend Jim Costner, a rash young man, grabbed a sledgehammer about 5 years ago and smashed a Columbus statue at San Jose City Hall. I thought it was a foolish thing to do. He's still paying for it, but I understand the motivation that he had for it. And now, with 2 minutes remaining, Paul, Marcel, and Sampson, it's not true that the city is that the Metro District is making $53,000 a day by putting people out on strike and then not having to pay the workers?
That's an example of bad figuring, because the district is obligated to pay half of its workforce. That's the Service Employees International Union, SEIU. Those workers are not on strike. They reached an agreement under the same terms, the same amount of money, essentially, that was offered to UTU. Slight differences, but same amount of money. And they reached an agreement, signed it, sealed and delivered, and they are still being paid, and that's the rule. They have a no strikes and no lockouts clause, so they're being paid, and that's about half of Metro's wage and salary expense. So the district is losing out on its fare revenue. The fare revenue just about equals the payroll for bus drivers. And of course there are other expenses like benefits and things like that, but the district is not pocketing a lot of money from this strike. That's a false what the union did to
where
come
did
up.
That figure come from? I recall there was in a paper in a letter on Sunday. You claim that this is just it's not 50, where did the 53,
no that comes from taking the amount of money Metro collects in sales tax and just assuming that there are no expenses. Again, the person forgot that SEIU workers are being paid. Some of them are actually working because they have to process payroll checks, which are due to the union members who are striking, even and other things like that. There's open enrollment for the benefits the union members who are on strike now are selecting their health insurance for next year. All of that has to go on, so SEIU is still being paid. This was a person who didn't understand how the budget and how the money works at Metro.
Any quick comments before Uncle Dennis comes in and ousts us from the studio?
Yeah, I'm just going to end with my usual focusing comments that we are talking here, when we look at the bus drivers, about a group of people who, the top two-thirds of whom, in other words, most, the majority, the large majority, earn more than $50,000 a year now. And last year, the median wage, the median income in this county was $40,000. So these are people who are doing better than the median. They are well situated in this economy, and also the average American worker who is lucky enough to have family health insurance from his or her employer pays $225 a month for that insurance, and the Metro bus drivers as of September 1st would pay $115 a month. So we're talking about a group of people who are already doing well economically, and they would like more. I urge you to go to the Metro website and read what they've asked for their three-year contract. The total increase, the final increase, and the permanent increase in the third year will be $2 million. That's a lot of extra, money, far beyond what Metro could afford. And we would see drastic service cuts and drastic fare increases to pay for that. There's just no answer.
Thanks, Paul, Marcel, and Sampson, for coming on. Come back and join us again on Sunday if you'd like. We'll have a lynch mob ready to take care of you.
Thank you for the time, Robert.
All right, then.
What about your lynch mob, Robert?
I lynch after lunch. Uncle Dennis is next. As you can hear, unfortunately, I'm going to have to leave you in his hands. I apologize, but...
That's
That's dangerous to be in my hands.
There you have it. But he's a handy kind of guy to have around. I can tell you one of the reasons we're broadcasting is because of Uncle Dennis and his fine work as a techie in spite of his atrocious social attitudes. We won't get into the social attitudes, but go ahead, Dennis. Proceed.
Has a beard, running to me a crying when it throws you out, running to me a crying on your own again. You got that pure feel, such good responses, but the picture has a mustache. You come into me with that soulful look on your face. Come in looking like you never ever done one wrong thing. Stars fall from the sky.
stars all from the sky. Oh, you and I. We'll be right back.
Thank you.